Welcome to the EU Energy Projects podcast, a podcast series from Enlit and Friends, focusing on the clean energy transition for the European Union and the EU Commission-funded energy projects that will help us achieve it. My name is Areti Daradimou. I am the editor of the EU Energy Projects podcast and your host. Hello, everyone. In this episode of the EU Energy Projects podcast, we are going to explore the role of nuclear energy in Europe's transition to a low-carbon future. I am joined by Candice Boudet, CEA and SNETP, and Jan Prehradny, Research Center RES and SNETP, to discuss innovation, safety, and collaboration in nuclear research, as well as how projects are shaping energy systems beyond electricity generation. Thank you both for being here with me today. And Candice, I would like to start with you. Could you briefly introduce the CEA's role in supporting the energy transition and carbon neutrality by 2050?
Yes, sure. Thank you. Thank you, Areti, for inviting me to join your podcast. So to answer that, I would say that CEA is driving France's energy transition, supporting industry, government and society on the road to net zero 2050. By cutting dependence on fossil fuel, boosting new energy industries and keeping costs down for citizens and businesses, the CEA combines ambition with responsibility, always meeting the highest safety and environmental standards. From nuclear to renewable, storage to smart grids, the CEA looks at the entire low-carbon energy systems. Its research blends advanced simulation, state-of-the-art facilities and strong global partnership, turning science into solutions for sustainable energy.
Thank you, Candice. Jan, could you also give us a short introduction of CVR and present its actions?
Thank you very much. So the Research Center RES is a very important research institution in the Czech Republic, but I believe also within Europe and other OECD countries. The main areas of our activities include research, support of the operation of nuclear and conventional power plants, research and development in the field of advanced nuclear technologies such as Generation 4 reactors, SMRs, and fusions, research support of the treatment and storage of radioactive waste, and research and development in the field of emission-free energy and advanced energy technologies, where special attention is currently paid to energy storage and thermodynamic circuits. A special role in our portfolio of activities is played by advanced material research, which is a cross-cutting and key topic for all research areas. At the Research Center RES, we have a number of interconnected research infrastructures of technologies, thanks to which we are now able to cover the complex needs of research and development in nuclear energy. For example, we are able to irradiate the material under test in our research nuclear reactor or expose it in a loop in the required environment, then perform a wide range of mechanical tests in hot chambers, and then analyze the effect of radiation and media on the microstructure of materials and state-of-the-art electron microscope facility.
Thank you, Jan. Candice, we have one more acronym to explain to those less familiar, and that is SNETP. So could you also briefly tell us what is SNETP and how does it connect nuclear research with Europe's broader energy goals?
Yes, sure. Thank you for this question. So SNETP is the European Technological Platform for Sustainable Nuclear Energy. It's an international non-profit association bringing together international community of over 115 members from industry to research, university to innovators, all working together to make nuclear energy safer, smarter, and more sustainable. Across its three pillars, SNETP is driving progress. The first is with Nugenia, advanced student reactor to be safer and more efficient in generation 2 and 3 of civil nuclear. Then you have SNE, developing Generation 4 systems to unlock the full potential of nuclear while minimizing the waste. And the last one is NC2I, opening the door to nuclear cogeneration, delivering clean electricity, heat, and even hydrogen for low carbon future. SNETP is more than a platform. We can say it's a movement uniting science, industry, and innovation to power the energy transition. So if you give me 4 more minutes on that to explain the link between R&D and SNETP, we can say that SNETP plays a kind of bridge role between cutting-edge nuclear research and the EU long-term vision for a cleaner, more secure, and more resilient energy system. First, SNETP makes sure that nuclear innovation is part of the conversation in Brussels. SNETP regularly works with the European Commission, contributing to policy discussion, writing down position papers, showing how nuclear technologies can help reach net zero targets, boost energy independence, and support industrial competitiveness. SNETP is also deeply involved in advancing small modular reactors and other innovative systems like the European Industry Alliance for SMR. This could make nuclear energy more flexible, scalable, and easier to integrate with renewable, which is a key to balancing Europe's future energy mix. All of this means that nuclear research isn't happening in a silo. It's directly linked to Europe's border goals, cutting emissions, securing energy supply, reinforcing industry, and creating a low-carbon future where nuclear plays a complementary role alongside renewable. And that's the target of SNETP.
Sounds great. And let me say here that those of our audience that would like to learn a little bit more on SNETP and the projects that it works on, they will have that opportunity at Enlit Europe at the EU Project Zone, where SNETP will take part with 4 or 5 projects and a very important and interesting, I think, session on nuclear on the first day of the event. But let us go a little bit further in the nuclear contribution in the energy transition. And Jan, why do you think that nuclear's contribution to the energy transition is sometimes underestimated compared to renewables, for example?
Unfortunately, the underestimation of nuclear energy is one of the longest standing difficulties this sector has faced. It's terrible, but it is true. In my opinion, nuclear power plants are currently the best technical organized solution for providing a long-term, reliable, and high-performance source of electricity that we are capable of designing and operating safely. Nevertheless, several unfortunate accidents in the past have significantly damaged the reputation of nuclear energy. Whether we speak about the accident in Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, or Fukushima, each of them had a strong impact on public perception. Moreover, unfortunate actions taken by some politicians, mainly after Fukushima, have further harmed this reputation, leading to the widespread belief that nuclear energy is inherently bad. Another drawback of nuclear energy is the, I would say, extremely lengthy process of licensing and subsequent construction of nuclear power plant. While solar plant can be built within days, a nuclear power plant often takes many years to complete. In today's world, where many politicians, managers, or other decision makers are elected or appointed only for a limited time, the construction of nuclear power plant is, in a way, politically unappealing. Because the person who makes the decision to build will not be the one who inaugurates it. As a result, there is often a lack of political courage to commit to such long-term projects. Some hope, however, lies in the development and deployment of so-called small modular reactors.
To be honest, Jan, as an energy journalist, I understand why people might be afraid when accidents happen. What I never understood, however, is why, as you said, politicians and people that have the power to explain things, why don't they opt for more security instead of trying to obliterate a technology that could actually be the future or part of the future of the energy transition? However, this is something that now, and correct me if I'm wrong, that now is changing. And it is actually due to small modular reactors or SMRs. So Candice, how are the reactors expected to change Europe's nuclear landscape, both technically and politically, in your opinion?
I agree with you, Areti and Jan. I mean, technically, the small modular reactor, they're smaller. They're modular, it's in the name, and quicker to build than traditional reactors. That means lower upfront costs, faster deployment, and more flexibility that could match with even the political mandate of some politicians. And from powering the grid to producing hydrogen and industrial need, they are not only for electricity. Technically, they also bring advanced safety features and can fit more easily alongside renewables, helping balance Europe's energy mix. Politically, SMRs are a tool for energy independence and industrial leadership. Through the European Industrial Alliance on SMR, for example, governments, industry, and researchers are working together to harmonize regulation, build supply chain, and attract investment. And in this industrial alliance, I would like to recall that SNETP is really deeply involved at all stages since the beginning of this alliance and up to now. This cooperation makes nuclear more accessible for countries that might not commit to large plants, while also supporting Europe's climate and competitiveness goals. In short, if I have to resume my views on the SMRs, they promise to make nuclear energy more flexible, affordable, and politically achievable. This is a new chapter for Europe's clean energy transition, as I see it.
Hello, everyone. Areti here. I would like to personally invite you to discover the EU Project Zone at Enlit Europe 2025 in Bilbao. Our event takes place from the 18th to the 20th of November. Come say hi to me at the EU Project Zone. Jan, what role does R&D on hydrogen and solar integration play alongside nuclear in building a resilient low-carbon system?
Frankly speaking, solar and nuclear power plants have very little in common. Their only real point of interaction is the unpredictable output of solar plants, which must be backed up by an independent source. However, nuclear power plants are generally not suitable for this purpose, as their operating characteristics do not allow for rapid and large output fluctuations. And that's where hydrogen technologies come into play. In the future, hydrogen could theoretically help balance these fluctuations that nuclear power plants would otherwise need to handle due to the high share of solar panels. The concept being considered is so-called hydrogen storage. During times of electricity surplus, hydrogen could be produced by electrolysis or other processes and later burned when electricity is scarce. At present, however, there are still a number of technical barriers that prevent large-scale deployment of hydrogen storage. The most significant issue is the economic feasibility of such system or such solution. In other words, or in numbers, let's say, the hydrogen production itself lost about 30-40% of energy already during electrolysis, followed by another 10, maybe 15% during compression, and up to 40% in the case of liquefaction. And that's all before even accounting for storage and distribution losses. The overall round trip efficiency of the electricity to hydrogen to electricity chain is therefore usually only around 25-30%. Let's say that in parallel, other energy storage systems are also under development. These systems are so-called thermal energy storage. They often use molten salts and can store thermal energy in the scale of several hundred megawatts, for example. However, here too, the economic balance remains challenging. So these systems are still being developed with the goal of improving their technological efficiency. I believe in the future, some combination of these types of energy accumulation could be used, but it will be in future.
Of course, it will be in future, especially if storage has something to say, because we're nowhere near yet when it comes to technologies like this. How will, however, digital tools help us, Candice? How will AI, for example, through projects like LLMS for EU, if I pronounce it correctly, a project that will be at the EU project Jonathan lead, how are they modernizing nuclear operations?
Then this project, the LLMS for EU, that's quite hard, is a project building a large language model and multilingual data set for sectors like energy, but not only energy, telecom, public services, and science. For nuclear and energy industries, it helps improve safety, assess risk, and share knowledge, even across different languages. By giving small and medium enterprises access to these AI tools, the project boosts efficiency, supports decision-making, and keeps operations compliant with energy regulation. This from renewable energy to research and public administration. These models make cross-border collaboration and innovation faster and smarter. This project is a proof that digital and linguistic inclusivity can supercharge industrial progress. And to me, that's a key to the future for nuclear.
Absolutely. METIS is another example of a very good project. And also, Jan, you mentioned Fukushima. So METIS has focused on seismic safety, which is very, very important. How do advances in nuclear safety research also improve resilience in non-nuclear infrastructures?
Nuclear industry has obviously strong background in safety assessment and advanced numerical analysis approaches, especially nuclear industry. The Euratom project METIS, completed in May 2025, focused on a seismic risk assessment for nuclear facilities. The researchers developed computational models and probabilistic analysis to simulate how earthquakes may impact nuclear installations. These tools allow operators and policymakers to make informed decisions about infrastructure safety. Performance-based design and structural resilience are shared concerns for both nuclear and non-nuclear infrastructures. The methodologies developed by METIS project are valuable for a wide range of critical infrastructure beyond nuclear facilities. By simulating the effects of seismic events, these tools help engineers and planners assess vulnerabilities and impairment, target risk reduction measures for bridges, hospitals, dams, energy grids, and many other critical infrastructure. Applying such models enables industries to prioritize investments, improve disaster preparedness, and maintain operational continuity during natural hazards. Insights from nuclear-focused seismic risk assessment can therefore form safety strategies across urban infrastructure, industrial complexes, and large-scale energy systems, enhancing resilience across sectors. Sharing knowledge and developing new approaches jointly with nuclear industry and academic partners benefits across fertilization and of different sectors dealing with seismic safety.
I want to go back a little bit on SNETP and the projects that it represents. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Candice, that they have spillover effects beyond nuclear. So can you give us an example where nuclear R&D directly benefits other industries?
Yes, you are right. And in the SNETP project portfolio, we do have many projects like that one. So I will just pick one. It's El Pais Tolero. The project is tackling a heightened challenge in nuclear facility, which is aging polymers. So wait for it. You're going to see how it can help the other technology. We are talking about cables, seals, and pipes degrade over the time, and keeping them safe is critical. This project has created a handheld optoelectronic system that gives operators real-time diagnostic, helping them spot wear and plan maintenance before the problem arises. But it's not just for nuclear plants. Wind, nuclear, solar, and other energy sectors can use it too, reducing downtime, improving safety, and boosting reliability. El Pais Tolero proved that artificial intelligence-driven monitoring isn't just smart. It's essential for safer, more efficient, and sustainable energy futures. But we do have a lot of more projects, and you can have a look in the SNTP website and even during ENLIT. I mean, it's a real opportunity to meet with the people and ask them what they are doing for nuclear and for the other technology too.
Thanks, Candice. I want to stay a little bit on the topic and ask you, how can collaboration across sectors accelerate both innovation and public acceptance of nuclear technologies? Because this is a very, very important aspect, acceptance of the public for nuclear technologies.
I mean, for me, the collaboration across the sector is key to accelerating both innovation but also public trust in nuclear technology, because it's what we are talking about. It's trust, confidence after the incidents and the fear that people may have. By bringing together industry, researcher, and public stakeholder, we pool expertise and resources to create safer, more efficient, and cutting-edge solution. At the same time, engaging with society helps address concerns, improve transparency, and show the real benefits of nuclear energy. Cross-sector collaboration doesn't just drive innovation, it builds confidence, supports informed decision, and helps integrate nuclear safely alongside renewables for a sustainable energy future. This is the key, the cross-collaboration between nuclear, wind, solar, even they can discuss with storage and grids, that's essential.
Candice, I couldn't agree more. An informed decision is always, let's say, the goal when it comes to our continent, to the European and to the European Union. And I want to ask Jan, how well are EU policies, because this is quite an important topic also, such as the Green Deal or Fit for 55, aligned with nuclear innovation priorities today?
Absolutely, without any reservations. You know, I am a reactor physicist. And therefore, I am a huge fan of nuclear energy. But still, I am ready to change my mind if someone shows me a better and more usable technology than nuclear reactor. However, this has not happened in my today more than 20 years of practice. what other fully technology solution do we have for generating carbon-free energy here in Europe? Oh my God, I apologize for my freakness, but unfortunately, I have a little faith in other sources. We can convince ourselves that solar energy will save us and we will be happy, but that is not the case. Just let's compare installed capacity to actual production. The difference between installed capacity and actual production is expressed in practice through the capacity factor. Installed capacity represents the sum of all panels' capacities and is approximately 340 gigawatts for European Union. It's from data from 2024. Annual production is actual energy delivered over the year. And in 2024, the solar generation accounted for 10-11% for European electricity, which corresponds to hundreds of terawatt hours. The calculation shows us that the capacity factor for solar panel is roughly 10%, meaning that on average, panels produce only 10% of what they would if running at full power 24/7. It's terrible, really terrible. The low annual percentage for Europe is relatively expected. The European Union is geographically diverse, north, south, and seasonality reduces the early average. We have a relatively long winter nights. The typical range could be, I don't know, German 10-11%, Spain 15, maybe 17-18. Okay, it's better, but still. For nuclear power plants, the capacity factor is significantly higher than for solar or wind because reactors run steadily and almost continuously. The global average in recent years is around 80-85%. In the European Union, most reactors operate in the range 70-90%, depending on fuel cycle outages and maintenance. Moreover, nuclear plants, all of them have an undeniable advantage. They are controllable and produce electricity even in a bad weather. In addition, carbon dioxide emissions from nuclear plants are virtually zero. All research and innovation currently happening in the nuclear sector are directly focused on increasing safety, reliability, and long-term sustainability of the nuclear cycle materials and technologies for the nuclear power plants. So I fully believe all of this is directly aligned with the mentioned European goals.
Jan, I appreciate your frankness, to be honest, and I would like to push it a little bit more by mentioning licensing and regulatory harmonization, which I know remain complex for SMRs. So could you honestly tell us how a project like Easy SMR, if I pronounce it correctly, is helping to streamline this process across Europe, a process that is really, really complex and with a lot of obstacles?
Easy SMR is a European-founded project developing light water small modular reactors, which are compact, scalable nuclear systems that use water as both coolant and neutral moderators. So we expect these reactors could offer enhanced flexibility and fast deployment compared to traditional large-scale plants. We spoke about that. So the project implements innovative advanced simulations to support experiments and uses advanced 3D printing technique to manufacture complex components with higher precision and efficiency. It also establishes standardized guidelines to streamline licensing and regulatory approval across Europe. By emphasizing modularity and flexibility, EasySMR ensures its innovations can inform not only nuclear energy, but also broader energy systems supporting adaptable solutions for renewables, microgrids, and industrial infrastructures. EasySMR contributes to licensing and regulatory harmonization in Europe by adopting a pragmatic and deployment-focused approach. Rather than duplicating existing high-level initiatives, the project works directly with real European light water SMR designs, so such as Newbart SMR, LDR50, Kalogina, or Rolls-Royce SMR, and considers potential deployment context in countries like Finland, France, United Kingdom, and Belgium. The goal is to analyze specific regulatory bottlenecks that could hinder future licensing process and to propose actionable recommendations. While specific regulatory challenges are still being explored, some examples such as passive safety systems or industrialized construction methods illustrate the kind of issues that may arise. The work is carried out in close coordination with national authorities and aligned with the European Industrial Alliance on SMRs.
Thank you, Jan. Candice, we mentioned it already or hinted on the skepticism that nuclear energy often faces. So I was wondering, what steps is SNEDP taking to improve citizen trust and awareness?
You're right, Arete, that nuclear energy often faces skepticism. We already talked about that a little bit. But so SNEDP, we focus on openness and dialogue. We bring citizens, young researchers, policymakers, and industry together at our forums. We do have one per year. It's open to all. Webinars, which are, you can find dates and topics online. So the discussion about nuclear aren't happening behind closed doors. We publish position papers and project updates openly, making research transparent and accessible. We also invest in SNEDP in education and youth engagement, because building trust means building understanding across generations. Through projects like SNEDP Forward, for example, or even offer, we open research facilities and studies to wider participation, helping to demystify nuclear sciences. I recall that offer was at ELNIC last year, if I remember correctly. So in short, SNEDP approach is about transparency, education, and inclusion, making sure people see nuclear not as a secretive technology, but as a shared part of Europe's clean energy futures. And being part of ELNIT is one step further to improve citizen awareness on nuclear.
Speaking of education that you mentioned, Candice, Jan, how do you see it, education and training, shaping the next generation of nuclear experts in Europe? Because we do need to see to the future also.
The ensuring a skilled workforce for the next generation of nuclear experts is one of the key challenges currently facing the sector, as all other sectors in Europe, let's say it. While nuclear energy still benefits from a sufficient pool of experts today, maintaining this in the long term is a priority. To address this, most institutions in Europe, I believe, actively collaborate with educational institutions at all levels, from secondary schools to universities and other specialized training centers. Some selected students are often offered scholarship provided with topics for bachelor's, master's, and doctoral theses, and involved in R&D projects alongside faculty. Additionally, lectures and dedicated courses at universities are offered by our companies to engage and to motivate students to pursue careers in nuclear science and technology. International organizations such as SNTP further support this effort by facilitating knowledge sharing and collaborating across Europe and globally, ensuring that the best practices and innovations are disseminated widely.
As we're approaching the end of our conversation, I have a couple of questions to finish on a positive point. I would like to ask you, Candice, what breakthroughs in nuclear technology excite you the most in the next 10, 15 years? Like, what will come?
What will come? You know that 10 to 15 years might sound a long time, but it's nuclear. It's quite a, you know, it's very short. You clap in your hands, bam, it's 15 years. So it must be something already in the pipeline. And to me, the biggest shift will be from artificial intelligences. We already spoke about some project using it, but to me, it's a real way to streamline operation, improve safety, and help country agree on harmonized standards, because that's going to be tricky part, and identify which technology best fit with each nation's specific needs. We also need to take this into account. And to me, it's exciting to think how the artificial intelligences could not only make nuclear smarter, but it could help build global collaboration for a cleaner and more resilient energy future.
I couldn't agree more, Candice. Yeah, that makes total sense. AI, it's of course. Jan, your thoughts?
So 10, 15 years, it's too short horizon in the energy sector for truly breakthrough changes. I believe and I hope, oh my God, that within this period, we will be able to launch serial production of at least one, maybe two types of modular reactors, initiate of construction of several large reactors in Europe, and see the global nuclear industry recover from years of prolonged stagnation. As for nuclear fusion, I expect its practical contribution to occur a longer timeline, more likely in the same 30, 40 years as it has been discussed since my school days.
Exciting years ahead, I see. 10 to 15, but maybe even more, of course. Candice, if you could leave listeners with one key takeaway about nuclear energy's role in Europe's future, what would it be?
I would say that nuclear energy is essential to reaching the net zero by 2050. We simply can't get there without nuclear. So many people fear the technology, but that fear fades when we understand how it works and how safety is carefully managed. Knowledge builds trust. Trust is key to embracing nuclear as part of the clean, reliable energy futures. And my last word would be, woman, go for nuclear. There is so many men. It's a kind of girl power, but we need women in nuclear. And if you have time and go to see what Wind Global is doing, they're doing great work, and I encourage you to have a look on their activities. They are working on engagement, citizen training, education, and that's my last word. Women, go for nuclear.
Oh my God, that is our new motto, Candice. I love it.
It must be.
I love it. Your thoughts?
Definitely agree with Candice. Please, woman, come on. But I want to say just one short conclusion. Please, appeal to all. Let us avoid short-term decisions. Focus on the long-term and make the most of the natural resources we have at our disposal. Resources that we can use efficiently, safely, and controllable. My keywords for better tomorrows are go green, go nuclear.
Another amazing motto. I'm going to use both of them with your permission in the article that I'm going to write about this discussion. Thank you both very much. I think this was a very interesting conversation. We explained a lot of things, and I'm hoping that we put, you know, a little stone towards people understanding a little bit nuclear, a little bit more. I know that I, over the years and with the help of organizations like SNETP, I got to understand and fear less nuclear myself. Thank you both very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Areti. Thank you.
You've been listening to the EU Energy Projects podcast, a podcast brought to you by Enlit and Friends. You can find us on Spotify, Apple, and the Enlit World website. Just hit subscribe and you can access our other episodes too. I'm Areti Daradimu. Thank you for joining us.